conducting a lawsuit for two wealthy merchants, boards a train. He's traveling as a first-class passenger from one South African city to another. At a wayside station, a man of European origin comes on board and is enraged to find an Indian in the first-class compartment he wanted for himself. He calls the police and has him bundled, luggage and all, from the train. This is not an excerpt from a novel or a vignette from a motion picture. It actually happened in South Africa at the turn of the century on a cold winter night. The Indian lawyer was Mahatma Gandhi. The grounds were being laid in South Africa for apartheid, the government's policy of racial separation. An Indian might be a schoolteacher, a medical doctor, a lawyer, or a farm worker. To the white South African, he was a coolie, and like the black and the colored, not entitled to the best society had to offer in services and amenities. Gandhi spent the night in an unheated, drafty waiting room with no food, no blankets, and nowhere to lie down. As he tells it in his autobiography, he felt no counter-hate as he shivered through that night. But with that experience began perhaps the greatest movement of our times, a demand for equal rights and human dignity, which brought nationhood to the people of India, and a thirst for self-rule to countless millions elsewhere. Gandhi's was a one-man crusade, which sparked the imagination and determination of millions. But global concern for the fundamental freedoms occurred much later. By 1945, 6 years of war had left many scars. There was widespread conviction that the war and its horrors had been caused, in large measure, by disregard and contempt for human rights. Society began to think and worry about man, about you and me, our human dignity, our rights. On the 10th of December, 1948, the United Nations General Assembly proclaimed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a standard of achievement to be pursued by all peoples and nations.
To commemorate Human Rights Day, the 25th since the proclamation of the Declaration, United Nations Radio presents Born Equal and Free, a review of the concepts and ideals which inspired this document, and of the successes and failures of the continuing endeavor to make it a truly effective instrument for lifting men everywhere to a higher standard of life and greater enjoyment of freedom.
History records many noble strivings towards the goal of freedom, justice, and peace. There have been many great declarations.
Magna Carta, in the year 1215.
The Bill of Rights, 1689.
The American Declaration of Independence, 1776.
The French Declaration of the Rights of Man, 1789.
Historic forward steps, but confined to specific countries and peoples. In 1948, the authors of the new document were agreed. The declaration must be for all peoples. It must be universal. And so the representatives of 58 nations meeting in Paris in the great theater of the Palais de Chaillot voted. As midnight approached on December 10th, 1948, the Universal Declaration was proclaimed. To remind ourselves of what this declaration is and what it is not, and to refresh our memory of the concepts and ideals which inspired its authors, let's go back to that meeting in the Palais de Chaillot. The speaker is the delegate of the United States and chairman of the UN Human Rights Commission, which had spent 2 years drafting the declaration. Here in the speech she made 25 years ago is the late Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt.
In giving our approval to the declaration today, it is of primary importance that we keep clearly in mind the basic character of the document. It is not a treaty, it is not an international agreement, it is not and does not purport to be a statement of law or of legal obligation. It is a declaration of basic principles of human rights and freedoms, to be stamped with the approval of the General Assembly by formal vote of its members, and to serve as a common standard of achievement for all peoples of all nations. We stand today at the threshold of a great event, both in the life of the United Nations and in the life of mankind.
Herbert Evatt of Australia was president when the General Assembly approved the declaration in a formal vote. And this is what he said in his concluding remarks.
It is the first occasion on which the organized community of nations has made a declaration of human rights and fundamental freedoms. And it has the authority of the body of opinion of the United Nations as a whole. And millions of people, men and women and children, all over the world, many miles from Paris and New York, will turn for hope and guidance and inspiration to this document.
What does that document promise?
The right to life, liberty, and the security of person.
The right to freedom from arbitrary arrest.
The right to fair trial.
To freedom of movement and residence.
To social security.
To work.
To education.
To a nationality.
To freedom of worship.
To freedom of expression.
The right of peaceful assembly.
The right to hold public office.
To seek and be granted asylum.
To own property.
To freedom from cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment.
These and many more are the rights proclaimed in the Declaration. And there are Articles 1 and 2, which affirm that all human beings are born free and equal. These two articles stress...
Article 1. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. Article 2. Everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration, without distinction of any kind.
That was the promise of Paris, 1948. Today we look at it from New York, 1973. The principle that all men are born free and equal remains a mirage to countless millions. Nations have accepted these documents in principle, but far too few have given effect to them. And so many, in many lands, are still denied access to the best society has to offer on the grounds of race, color, sex, religion, or social origin. Just as Mahatma Gandhi was denied access to that first-class train coach 75 years ago. There is one field in particular in which developments since the proclamation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights have been dramatic. When that declaration was unanimously approved on the night of December 10, 1948, there were 58 members of the United Nations. Today, there are 135. The great majority of the states which have become members since 1948 did not even exist as sovereign states when the declaration was adopted. They were colonial or dependent peoples, governed by alien powers, whose seats of government were not only thousands of miles removed from the territories they controlled, but whose interests were hundreds of years removed from those of the people whom they claimed as subject. All this has changed. To this day, there are still colonial or dependent peoples. In some parts of the world, particularly in southern Africa, there are still citizens of countries who, on the age-old grounds of their race or color, are denied the rights of the very citizenship they are forcibly made to accept. But as compared with the situation which existed in 1948, they are relatively few. And their continuing struggle to escape from this inhuman bondage is no longer a lonely struggle. It is supported by all but a handful of the billions represented at the United Nations by their sovereign, independent governments. It is fair to say that the moral impact of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights played no small part in this dramatic change. It remains to be said, however, that as world leaders met last month at UN headquarters to consider plans to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Declaration, their mood was not one of triumph. Decolonization was one aspect. It was evident to all that within both the old and the new states, millions of human beings were still deprived of the basic rights without which they could not live in human dignity. As Gholam Ali Sayar of Iran said, the large number of declarations and conventions adopted since 1948 might appear impressive. But far too often, he noted, goals were unfulfilled, owing to the absence of the necessary basic conditions.
Quel sens peut avoir la liberté pour un homme, une femme?
What does freedom mean for a man, a woman, or a child, ignorant and starving? Is not misery and poverty a terrible prison? How can we speak of the right to work when there is no work to be done? Or what is the right to education where there are no schools or teachers? What purpose can it serve to speak of the equal rights of men and women if women are not even aware of their rights and responsibilities?
Mauro Sergio da Fonseca Costa Couto of Brazil noted that while much had been achieved, a good deal remained to be done to eliminate the injustices still existing.
Looking at the panorama of human rights from a historic point of view, we can say with satisfaction that much has been done in these last 25 years. We cannot affirm, however, that injustice still extant will disappear in the next quarter of a century.
Jacques Bourgoin of France suggested that the United Nations should henceforth devote its attention primarily to solving problems rather than to further legislative work. Lydia Pavlovna Likova of the Soviet Union said the Universal Declaration had been effective in protecting workers because it recognized the right to social security.
It is not sufficient to proclaim human rights. The material conditions must be created which enable them to become a reality. For that reason, the Soviet delegation pressed for the mention in the Declaration of Social and Economic Rights.
Robert Kitchen of the United States said that while the past 25 years had witnessed a movement toward greater freedom and equality, violations of human rights remained prevalent.
The movement to greater freedom and equality has indeed been the most characteristic social force of the last quarter of a century. While the world has praised and sometimes implemented the ideals contained in the Declaration, we are still too far from a world in which human rights are everywhere observed by individuals and protected by governments.
Human rights, in the words of the Universal Declaration, are inherent. They are vested in and belong to the nature of man. No external authority, no government, however benevolent, can grant and assure these rights. Not even by the votes of the members of the United Nations has this age-old goal yet been achieved. Once again, it is Gandhi, that towering figure in the human rights movement, who put his finger on a major cause of failure.
The true source of rights is duty. If we all discharge our duties, rights will not be far to seek. If leaving duties unperformed, we run after rights, they will escape us like a will-o'-the-wisp. The more we pursue them, the farther will they fly.
That is, perhaps, the root of the problem.
Born Equal and Free, a program to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the signing of the Human Rights Charter, the 10th of December, 1948. Prepared by the international staff of United Nations Radio, this program has been brought to you from United Nations headquarters in New York.